Hello and welcome to the preview, a little bit different from the usual previews we do. Today we are here to preview Scotland versus the Czech Republic in a group stage match, a major tournament. Let me repeat that, a group stage match of a major international football tournament. Scotland are part of it, we're there, finally. We're back where we belong, which is, I mean, it is the group stages. That's where we belong, the group stages. Not beyond that, but no, we'll get to that. I'm Christopher Gallagher, and I am joined, what is a terrific panel. We've got Erin Connolly. Hello, Erin, how are you?
Hi, mate, I'm really well. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Erin, what top are you wearing?
Bulgaria. 90.
It's an absolute peach. Stoichkov, Lechkov, all the Kovs. Love a Kov, the best Kovs. Yep. But weird, this went weird again. But we're also joined by our good friend Simon from the Fit's Been Happening podcast. Hello, Simon, how are you?
I'm good, mate. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to this. I've been very buzzing for obviously the games tomorrow. I'm just woke up today with an absolute buzz, so I'm happy to be on here and talking about the game. So thanks for having me.
No bother at all. Simon is wearing the France 98 top.
No, it's not. Right. It's an old Umbro Scotland fake belter.
Right, okay. So what it is, I said France 98, and I'll tell you why I'm saying that, because when I see that top, it's the qualifiers for France 98. Because to me, that's Kevin Gallagher scoring against Austria at Celtic Park. Absolute belter. Yeah, well, look, I get
before
it.
My time, that one.
Yeah, I can imagine. As soon as I said that, I thought, hold on a minute, like, what? Who's the old guy in the room? So we'll talk about our kind of journey with Scotland as well. But I just, you know, it really is. How are you feeling about this, Erin? Obviously, we've had a horrendous season with Celtic, and I feel like this is a really good kind of palate cleanser to kind of help you to fall back in love with football a little bit. How are you feeling about it?
Gal, I'll be honest, mate, I'm gutted you even mentioned the word Celtic today. I thought we were going to avoid that completely and just go all in on Scotland. Fuck Celtic for a day. I think it's probably not quite sunk in yet for me personally still. It probably won't until kick-off tomorrow, but you know, I'm 29. Scotland have played in two tournaments, I think, in my lifetime. I don't really remember them. I remember the Brazil game from France 98, going home for school, but I was only six. And my memories are very vague, so it's been a lifetime of pain to get to this point. And I don't think it's sunk in yet, so really looking forward to tomorrow. Spoke to my brother earlier about trying to find out a way where he can sort of dog walk for a wee bit of time and watch the game, but I'm just so excited to see Scotland in a major tournament. And obviously, you know, within context, it's not quite the same, is it, with COVID and the pandemic and everything and reduced capacity and stuff. Obviously, all that plays into play and makes it a little bit disappointing that you can't get along to the games, but it's just amazing to be in a major tournament and to be in a major tournament and playing games at Hampden as well. I suppose we shouldn't take that for granted.
Absolutely. What about yourself, Simon? How are you feeling about the whole thing?
Kind of echoing what's just been said there, but it's surreal. I'm 29 in 2 weeks, and again, I remember some memories of France 98, but I don't remember it. And see just the build up to it is surreal. And I've got like a lot of good mates down in Wales, and I was out on holiday with them when they had that good Euro campaign in, what was that, 2016? 24?
Yeah,
16. And I was out on holiday with them for it, and it was incredible. And I was even like, just I was buzzing off of their buzz, and now I'm like, that's our turn. And it's one of those ones I've always thought in the back of my head, we'll eventually make it to a tournament, but we're actually there. And yeah, I know with COVID and everything, but I think obviously as a Celtic fan as well, and don't want to talk about Celtic obviously for the sad season we've had, but the fact that we've had such a bad season, see, actually been buzzing about football again. It's not a thing that sounds crazy to say, but it's not something you're used to at the minute. Like,
yeah,
it's a complete change of tone. So I honestly haven't been this excited for a football game in my life. I don't think it's the fact that it's happening tomorrow is just, it's mind-boggling to me. I'm absolutely buzzing for it.
Yeah, me too. I want to get some of your kind of first memories, best memories, worst memories and stuff. I mean, there's plenty of worst memories. We might even scrap that because fuck that, man. That's pretty much the last 20 years.
I know, there's been enough talking about bad shit this season.
I don't get that to fuck. But, you know, so, I mean, I'm the old dude of the panel. So I remember Italia 90. For Italia 90, I would have been 7. I turned 8 in the June the 29th. That is my birthday. We've got a P.O. box if anyone wants to send me any presents. But we don't have a P.O. box. Just made that up. But France 98, sorry, Italia 90. So from when I was growing up, Scotland were at Italia 90, Euro 92. We obviously missed out in 94. Then we were at Euro 96. And then we were at France 98. And then in 2000 qualify campaign for Euro 2000, I was working at the SFA. So like my sort of, I was like from people our age, they always talk about in the 70s and 80s, you just expected to qualify. You know, even in the 90s, we were always kind of, you know, we were always kind of expecting to get there. Like I think we always thought our glass ceiling was, you know, the group stage. And you know, if you look at how we went out at Euro 96 on goals scored. We went out of the 1974 World Cup on a, you know, goal difference as well. Like everything, you know, in Italia 90, we won, I think Ireland went through the same amount of points as us and stuff. Like it's just the luck that we have in international football is so bad that, you know, I'm now at the point where I'm like, fuck it, you know, I think we could end up winning this fucking thing. Do you know what I mean? Like that's how that I've just flipped, reversed it. But my first memory would have been the Sweden game at Italia 90 when we beat Sweden 2-0. And when I say my first memory, I was 7. So it's kind of like a jarred sort of kind of, I remember bits. I remember my dad just shouting loudly and my uncle's going crazy and shouting about Roy Aitken, and you know, apparently Roy Aitken said in the tunnel, look lads, these guys are shiting it and all that, and they're no up for the fight and stuff like that. So that was my first memory. My best memory, I probably was Euro 96, because again
England fan, eh? Big England fan, big Gaza fan, aren't you? That's
said it with a smile on his face, love it. But no, like, obviously, we played really well against Holland. John Collins' handball on the line. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but he literally hits the ball around the fucking the post, which was great. The Dutch pounded us for 90 minutes, but, you know, we survived that. We played really well against England, even though we lost, and then against Switzerland, we were great. So there was something from all three games, even though we lost the game against England. We played well in all of those games. That's my best memory is probably Euro 96. But first memory would be Italia 90. Best memory would be Euro 96. And greatest memory is when we win Euro 2020. we'll go to Simon. Give me your first and your best.
My first and my best are the same memory for me. It was my first Scotland game. It was Ukraine 2007. And I'd never been... I'd only just started going to Celtic games. Like my dad's not into football, so I never really went to games when I was younger. And then as I was getting, I could afford my own tickets, whatever, I started going myself. And I remember my mate said to me, he was like, I've always watched Scotland, I tell, I've always been a big Scotland fan, but my mate was like, listen, I've got a ticket going, like, you'll be by yourself, but do you want it? And I was like, absolutely. When it was an absolute scorcher of a day, stood right in the north stand in amongst the Tartan Army. It was back when it was actually enjoyable at Hampden and everyone was standing. It was a great atmosphere. And I think Miller scored after 5 minutes or something. And James McFadden. And the thing I was most excited about and going to a Scotland game, I probably shouldn't admit this, but Andriy Shevchenko was like the guy at the time. And I went to go watch him. And I don't know how, but David Weir kept him quiet. I don't really know what that was about. But it was absolutely amazing. And James McFadden ran them ragged that day, and just being in that, like, I was just so taken aback. Like, I've had, by that point, I'd been to European games, Old Firms, the rest of it, and I'd witnessed great atmospheres and the rest of it, but being at that Scotland game, there was just something different about it, and I just absolutely loved it, and it's a completely different feeling with international football. And I know a lot of people don't really buy into the national side, and I think that's a generational thing because, as you've alluded to, we had such success. We were getting to tournaments regularly, and we've been absolutely shite for what, 20 odd years now. But Matt, that day for me, like, I still remember it so well, and I think I'm in my memory, I make it more than what it was. I think I keep remembering it as if it was like every time I try and remember it, it's like a nicer day. And McFadden, I think I tell myself McFadden scored the hat trick. He scored one goal, but I just keep lying to myself and thinking it was better than it was. But aye, that was absolutely amazing. And that day will always stick out for me as the day that, like, for me, best Scotland memory. That and paired with, this is how shite we've been, but Steve McManus scoring a 96th minute winner against Liechtenstein.
Liechtenstein, yeah.
That's the level of how shite we are. Like, that sticks out as a memory for me. But aye, between those two, it was probably there. And I think that what I'm so excited about is the potential that something can actually overlap that, and I can actually have a successful memory rather than my second favourite moment being a 96th minute Steve
equaliser. Yeah, against a fucking minnow. Mental.
It was.
Aaron, yourself, first and best?
Firstly, Gil, can I just see listening to you rhyme off all the tournaments you've seen in the 90s? Felt a bit weird thinking that a 90s football fan's privileged, because we hear all this time at Celtic.
It's balanced though, yeah, because like Scotland were getting places and Celtic were fucking dropping
off. Is that what we're going again? But Lindsay said earlier, was it a deep dive this week when she said that we've given up 10 in a row so Scotland could qualify for a tournament? Some sort of footballing god taking the piss out of us. Is that what happened in the 90s as well?
No, because, no, I'm not having that. Right, come on. Right, hurry up. Right. Scrap that.
My first memory, I've got vague memories of France 98, but my first real memory is probably the England playoff game at Hampden in 99. So I think in the lead up to that game, my uncles used to take me to my own football, and I can't remember what they said to me. Basically, one day said, if you score, I don't know if it was 4 or 5 goals or something at 7-a-sides, we'll get you. Remember the salmon top that you had that year?
Yeah.
The salmon top with the blue across it. Said, if you score however many goals it was that day, if you do that, we'll get you that strip for the game, because we knew we were going to the game maybe a week or so later. And I think I ended up scoring like 9 or something. And I remember just like running about being so happy that I was getting that strip, even though it's an absolute stinker. But that was my first memory going to that game at Hampden, and obviously we got beat, but it's just the atmosphere. I think it was the first time Scotland and England had played in, I don't know, 10, 12 years or something.
I think
like that
1989 was the last time before that. Yeah, so it was literally 10 years, yeah, a decade.
So it was a real huge memory for me. It was the first time I went to a Scotland game, as I said, and then I don't really go as much anymore, but I went through a period in my life going to quite a lot of Scotland games. And my best memory, 100% the away win in France, that McFadden goal. I was, what would I have been, 16, I think. I was in the Vogue bar in Rutherglen, me and a couple of my mates. My girlfriend at the time from school, her dad was a regular in there, so we used to go along there. And I met one of my primary school teachers, my primary two teacher, I think. I met her in the Vogue bar that night. I'm like jumping about cuddling her, 16 years old. After McFadden scored an absolute belter against France. But that's my best Scotland memory by far. I mean, there's a couple, some other good ones in there. Obviously, McFadden against Holland was a good one as well, 2007, I think, or 2005 maybe. Because my uncle just graduated that day and we watched it.
That was 2000. That was 2001.
Was it?
When McFadden scored against Holland with the pass from Fletcher.
It wasn't that early.
It was. It was the qualifiers for the 2002 World Cup. Yeah, it was, yeah.
Oh, well.
Because we got scudded 7-0 on the return leg.
Aye, 6 it was, wasn't it?
6, aye. And then Paul Merson came out and said, no.
It was 2003. It was for the 2004 Euros, apparently.
Okay. Ah, well, that's closer than 2007. So, how about that?
Is it? That's just about it. Good maths.
Yes, maths. Finally, maths helps me out. No, listen, these are all great memories. And, you know, it's funny, like, the goal against... I remember the build-up to the Ukraine game, literally sitting in work, really nervous about that, because obviously there was a Ukraine game and then the Italy game, and, well, it's not the less said about the Italy game, the better.
But bastards.
Aye, absolutely. And obviously the France, you know, beating them home and away, and obviously that was the same campaign. That was an incredible campaign. I just want to put a couple more highlights for me. Paul McStay scoring against the CIS was, I remember as a wee guy, McStay and McAllister in that tournament, Euro 92, were exceptional. And that's really, if McStay was ever going to leave, that was probably peak McStay, even though that was when Celtic were on such a downward curve. I loved watching Paul McStay play for Scotland. Just an absolute fucking thrill. I love seeing a Celtic captain play for Scotland. It's an absolute pleasure, I think. Right, let's kind of go into where we are. Euro 2020, opening question I'm going to give you guys. How far, realistically, can Scotland go? Erin, we'll keep with yourself. How far can Scotland go?
Mate, we'll fucking win it.
I'm here for that.
We'll fucking draw our way to the final and win on penalties.
Listen, we're the best penalty fucking kick team ever. I can't believe I've said penalty kick. We're the best team on penalties. I don't know. Simon, echo it. Fucking why not?
100%. Like, I was thinking of this earlier on, and I thought, do you know what? I know it's such a cliche to say competition football, blah, 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 but see, like, I watched Greece pull off an absolute miracle, and I watched Portugal with not the best squad win a tournament as well. I don't see why. I think Scotland, in terms of preparation and where we are, I think it's the most prepared team I've ever seen Scotland have in my lifetime. So I genuinely wouldn't be surprised if we get pumped 4-0 in every game, but I wouldn't be surprised if we won it. I'd be over the moon, but I've seen that happen.
Yeah, I very much the Schrodinger Scotland. We're either 4-0 up or 4-0 down. So it'll be interesting. How far can we go? Ah, fuck it. I think we can go far. Why not? Like, fucking, it's sunny. We've got a good squad of players. We've got a squad of players who, I think as Simon kind of says, this really, really prepared squad of players. And I really wish people would stop saying, they're not really a team of superstars. They're not really, they're good footballers. Scott McTominay, Kieran Tierney, Robertson, John McGinn, Shea Adams is playing at a high level. Like, we've got good players, Erin. And I think sometimes people just run out this idea of, Scotland, they work hard for each other. But actually, Billy Gilmore, Callum McGregor, we've got technically good footballers.
Oh, aye, there's some really good players in the squad, and I think, Scotland are always put down, and I think we actually do it a lot to ourselves, and it's probably based off a trauma of, like you say, some of the memories we've just discussed, the early game, stuff like that. It's easy to put yourself down and to elevate yourself and hope that you can do well, but there are loads of good players in the squad, loads of very good players in the squad that you've just rhymed off. I think Steve Clarke seems to be getting the best out of them. I mean, it's not the greatest watch, but, he has his own philosophy and his way of getting results, and he's got his results, and like I say, we're going to draw away to the final, won't it?
I love it. Simon, that left-hand side is right up there with some of the best in the tournament and the best in the world, but that right-hand side is kind of the problem. Talk me through your thoughts on the squad overall.
Do you know, I watched, it was some clip on Twitter, I don't even know where it was from, but Tony Adams got asked about Scotland and he just dismissed and made some stupid joke about, I don't know what, like basically insinuated that we had no threats, which I've bookmarked that tweet and I will come back to it when we win at Wembley, but the thing is, I know I said we're a prepared squad, but I don't think there's an international team that are as a dark horse as much as we are for this tournament. I think that if Scotland, if the players that we have, the level they're playing at, the season that they've had as well, see if that was a Czech Republic or Russia and you looked at their squad and you went, fuck, they've got quite a lot of decent players. Everybody would be going, by the way, that's the dark horse for the tournament. But because it's Scotland, it's written off. When Wales had that good run, they had a lot of great players in there. They had players that are playing well. They were at their peaks. Gareth Bale, Ramsey, the rest of them. Everyone was hitting form at the right time. And you look at with Scotland, I think everybody, that's why I know you're saying about the left side. The left side is brilliant, but the right side for me, I'm happy with Stephen O'Donnell and Patterson and Forrest and the options that we've got on that because we're such a steady unit and I don't think there's a team that are as prepared. And the other thing is, when we played the Netherlands, that was our first friendly in over 2 years. Every game we've played, we've been playing for something under Steve Clarke. They've been prepared. They know what they're doing. There's something at stake. And I think that's really helped Steve Clarke get his players playing for him and understanding that philosophy. And it's not the greatest to watch at times, but I don't think there's another team. I know this is a big statement, right? But I don't think there's another team in that tournament that are as prepared as Scotland, where everybody knows. You can tell what the lineup's going to be tomorrow, and everybody knows what they're doing. We're the most routine team in that tournament for me. Like, even England, they're bickering over Sancho and Grealish and whatever, and 19 right backs and the rest of it. We've got such a steady 11, and I think I'm just buzzing to see how we actually got on at a tournament, because I think the one thing that Clark does is he takes the pressure off the players, and you can see that they go out there and they're fearless.
Erin, is it fair to say, and this is no disrespect to Scotland, but Steve Clarke's done to Scotland what he did with Kilmarnock, where he took a group of players within a league, if you look at Euro 2020 as a league, and he's really, as Simon says, got them working and knowing exactly what they're supposed to do. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of, it's kind of what we've always kind of wanted.
Steve Clarke was a natural appointment at the time because of his work at Kilmarnock, where, as you say, you know, he took a group of players who were decent at the level they were playing at, but he took them and overachieved and finished third in a league, and they should never have finished third when you look at the quality of squad they had. And now you look at a couple of years down the line, what's happened to Kilmarnock, I think it even shows further just how good a job that was that he'd done there.
Yeah.
And he's done the same at Scotland, and I have my own frustrations with it sometimes, because I think we've, as you said, yeah, earlier, Gal, we have some good players, and I think sometimes we struggle when we need to be on the front foot in games. I think you've seen that a little bit in Luxembourg, point to miss chances, but that's just a huge frustration over the course. You know, he's got his results and he's got his here, and no one else has done that. You look at the amount of managers we've tried, the amount of good squads we've had. You know, we speak about players like McFadden, Fletcher, even Barry Ferguson, that run when we do lose to Italy, you know, we just couldn't get over the line. Clark's got us here, and that's a fantastic job, and that's why he was picked. We knew we were going to get him. We knew he was going to set us up to be hard to beat. We are hard to beat. We knew he was going to set us up to be dogged, determined, but I think also in possession at times, you know, like we said, I think we are quite disparaging towards ourselves, and others certainly put us down. We've got right good football players, and maybe sometimes I'd like to see them just get off the reins a little bit, but that's just not Steve Clarke's way, and who am I to question him, because he's leading us out of the Euros tomorrow, and I'll be sitting in the house watching.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, Scotland, and we're going to do a build up to the actual game itself, where we'll pick our team and stuff, and we'll get there in a moment. But stay on set up. You know, we've played 3-5-2, we've played 3-4-3, we've played that sort of 3-4-2-1 with one target man and two wide players. What do you think, Erin, and I'll come to you in a moment, Simon. Erin, what do you think suits us best for a game that we need to win? Because I know Steve Clarke said that we don't need to win tomorrow, and I know he said that, you know, four of the third best teams go through. But I personally think we probably need to win tomorrow. So if you were to look at us from being on that front foot, what setup do you think suits us better?
I agree. I think we need to win tomorrow if we want to go through. I would probably stick with the 3-5-2. It's not a formation I like, as people will know through listening over the course of the last season. I'm not a huge fan of it, but I think what we do have is we have players who, and we have a few, you know, niches and changes that he's made to that formation in terms of using players in certain areas, but getting something about different out of them. Like Kieran Tierney's probably the best example. You won't see many left-sided centre-halves in a free who go and overlap their wide player. And Kieran Tierney does it consistently. And what it does is it causes problems for opposition. And it allows Andy Robertson, Andy Robertson's a great player. I don't think he's as dynamic as Kieran Tierney. I think Robertson quite likes just sitting off the game a wee bit and allowing Tierney to get round him. I think I would go, we'll obviously get to it, but the two strikers, Dykes is massive for us. You know, I said it when he first came into Team Gal, we spoke about it. I had no idea Lyndon Dykes. I knew him from Livingston and stuff. I knew he'd caused us some problems, but I didn't think he could play at this sort of level. I really didn't. I remember when Rangers were linked to him, we sort of laughed it off at the time because I had no idea he could have stepped up and played at this level, but he gave us a real focal point at a really crucial time in that qualification period. You know, he's a target man in all sense of the word, but you know, he does it so well. He's such a handful for defenders that it allows players around him to find the little pockets of space, and what we have is good players around him. You think of McGinn, McGregor, even Christie, Forrest, Ryan Fraser, all of these options. These are guys who I'd be tempted to use. I think the main change, probably, if you're talking about if we want to be on the front foot in a game, it's potentially, do you look at Adorno and think, maybe I'll put Forrest there and try and give us a bit more of an attacking threat coming from the right. But that, I'm more than happy with 3-5-2. I think it fits the squad of players that he's picked really well. And he's obviously, you know, worked on it for a long time and he's picked that squad of players for a reason.
Yourself, Simon, would it be 3-5-2 for you, or would you like to see any sort of change-up?
No, I think everything that was just said there is pretty spot on. I think it's plenty of strengths as well. We're going to get the most out of this tournament and hopefully get a result tomorrow. And I think what Steve Clarke has got with the players, we're quite fortunate with the players that we've got. It's worked out quite well. We've got a young squad. But they're also quite brave. I'd say every single player is quite confident in taking the ball and carrying the ball, which if you're having, whether it's a 3 or a 5 at the back, whatever way you want to look at it, you need players, and Tierney does it in abundance. But even Jack Hendry against Holland, high pressing into the 40, like they're 35 yards for their goal, and he's high pressing, winning the ball back, that kind of stuff. That's what will win games for us and create moments for us. And I think that's where we've got our best chance. And the other thing as well, I think because we've been playing that, there's a patience with the squad. I think when we've got the ball, maybe it's with the absence of fans, it's a wee bit easier. But whenever I've watched Scotland before and we're knocking the ball side to side, it doesn't look as if there's any purpose or any reason or any idea of where they're actually going with it. But when they've got the ball now, there just seems to be an absolute calmness, whether it is McTominay and Tierney and Hendry and Hanley knocking the ball between each other 10, 15 times before it goes forward. There's no panic. There's assurance within the squad. They know anybody on the ball has the ability to do something. Even Ryan Christie's goal in Serbia came from Stephen O'Donnell charging up the park and winning not one, but two loose balls. And I would never credit Stephen O'Donnell for being able to do something like that. But for Scotland and under Steve Clarke, he's a different player. And we've got that ability, and even like Patterson or Forrest, whoever it may be on the right, everyone has that ability to pick up the ball, carry the ball and make an impact on the game. And I think that's where our real strength lies in the in transitions, is I think we're so dangerous on that. So I think the two up top I would take, but if we were playing Dykes and Shea Adams, I'd want Chris in there. I know a lot of Celtic fans will be screaming at this to suggest that Ryan Christie could be the answer for something, but he's when he plays in Scotland, and it's a setup that quite clearly everybody has a role, they're aware of their role, and it's not just going to shoot and see if you can score. And I think Christie is going to be absolutely huge for us if he starts.
Yeah, we'll come to that in a moment. I think that's a good point about Christie. He's very, very, very industrious. Works really hard. For Scotland, he doesn't do what he does for Celtic, which I understand that the frustration comes from his consistent shooting. But, you know, we'll come to that in a moment. Weak positions from a Scotland point of view. We're not blessed with centre-halves of great calibre. That's to take absolutely nothing away from the guys who've got us here, because I'm a big fan of Declan Gallagher. I think he's a terrific signing. I think he's a terrific pickup for Aberdeen. I really like Liam Cooper. I know that he's not everyone's cup of tea, but I think he's a really, really good stopper. Grant Hanley, he's an honest big guy. I think he's, again, I think you've got three guys who, you know, Liam Cooper's the captain of Leeds. He's playing at a high level. He's playing on a very, very specific team for Leeds, though, under Bielsa, that's very different to how we play. It's interesting. On that, you know, Kieran Tierney 100% will play every single game at left-handed, the left-handed centre-back in a back three. The other two positions, you're looking at Grant Hanley, you're looking at Cooper, you're looking at Gallagher, you're looking at Hendry. McKenna doesn't really come into the thinking at the moment, and I don't think he will for this tournament, because you've got four players for two positions. Talk me through your thoughts on those players, Eden, and we'll come to you in a second, Simon.
So I think as well as Dykes coming into the team at the time, what also really changed the thoughts was, because it's easy to forget, Steve Clarke had a real tough start at Scotland. There was actually calls for his head for a while.
Yeah.
Some fans. I think Dykes was a huge part in that change, and he found a system that started to work. Another huge part in the change was obviously going with Tierney on the left-hand side, and then McTominay, it was, you'll remember, for a while on the right-hand side. And no, McTominay's not a centre-half, and I'm not going to say he should play there. But I think what he gives you in that area, someone who's comfortable on the ball, who can progress the game forward. And I think that's why, personally, Jack Hendry would play there for me. I think especially on that right side of the back three, I think you need someone who can progress the ball forward with passing and try and break the lines. I think in the middle, we've always seen consistently, it's always someone of the ilk, McKenna, Gallagher, Hanley. So it'll be one of those three, more likely Hanley, just because of the level he's played that consistently for Norwich this year. I know Clark likes Gallagher, but he has dropped out before, so I think it'll be Hanley. I mean, these guys are all honest, big defenders. They all do the basics fairly well. They're all prone to a mistake. All three, the McKenna, Hanley and Gallagher, are all prone to a mistake, and they're not going to do anything incredibly good. They're just going to go about their business, hopefully in a fairly quiet manner for the most part, and do the basic work. So I think it's really important that you're always going to have Tierney on that left-hand side, and Tierney's role is very different to any other two centre-halves, as I've already said. You know, he's got a bit of a free rein to go and push forward and try and make things happen for us, because he's got the ability to do that. You know, between him and Robertson, you've got two probably the best five left-backs in the world, maybe even higher than that, may even be two of the best three, but they're definitely right up there. So Tierney's role is totally different. I think just that right-side centre-half role, for me personally, needs to be someone who can progress the ball forward. If it's not, I think you find us then finding it difficult to get out sometimes, and that might just cause us some problems.
Yourself, Simon, who do you fancy?
I'd pretty much go for that. It annoys me talking about how impressive Jack Hendry has been lately, because it's just another symbolism of how bad our recruitment has been, or our ability to actually keep players or sell them on for a profit. But anyway, aside for that, Jack Hendry for me, I think he's the best option that we've got on the right hand side, from McTominay. In an ideal world, if Ryan Jack was fit and he was going, I'd put Jack in the middle and drop McTominay back one, just because in possession, Clark likes us going, especially if it's Adams and Dykes up top. He quite likes a direct route when we're in possession at times, and it's an option that we're not afraid to use, and I think McTominay's range is great. We don't really have that in any other centre-back, I don't think, but I would probably, as much as for me, Declan Gallagher that night in Serbia was the best player in the park, I don't think he put a foot wrong, and he was up against Mitrovic, who then went on and scored 5 and 6, I think, and absolutely tore Ireland apart. So he kept him quiet all night, which is no easy task. I wouldn't be upset to see Gallagher starting, but I would probably go Hanley, just because of how he's been playing this season, the season that he's had, and I think that's a lot that comes into it. And I think, obviously, I know it's not the defence, but Billy Gilmour as well. It's the same kind of thought process, that it's how these players have come off the back of it. And I was listening to Craig Brown talking about it, and he said a lot of it does come down to, you need to pick players who feel good, and you want to pick guys who, you're only talking about potentially three games. You don't want to pick somebody because they might be good. You want to pick somebody who feels good, who their touch is just going for them. Things are just, it just happens for them. Yeah. They're in good form. And I think because of that, I'd probably go Hanley, Hendry, Tierney.
Interesting. We'll come back to what our teams are going to be, but those are all good points. I think that, I personally think if we had just one more centre back of real quality, I think we'd go up a notch. And again, that's no disrespect to Gallagher or Cooper or Hanley or even McKenna. I think they're all good footballers, and honest as the day is long. And I know that sounds really condescending, but it's true. You know, they're not, most of them aren't ball playing centre halves. And I think Jack Hendry's a really good player, and I do think he's improved a lot. But I do sometimes just worry about his concentration levels a little bit. And I know you mentioned Erin, and again, as I say, we'll come to that with our predicted lineups, but James Forrest there would be a massive gamble. I think Nathan Patterson would be a massive gamble.
Yeah.
And I'm not a massive fan of Stephen O'Donnell. I think, again, Stephen O'Donnell's a good player, and I think he has played well for Scotland as well, but it kind of nullifies that position for me a little bit. And I know, and it's a hard balance, and again, we'll come to that. Just for him to crunch some numbers, Scotland, 2 defeats in 15, but to be fair, we were steaming for both of those games against Slovakia and Israel, so who fucking cares, to be honest? Undefeated in 5, 3 draws and 2 victories. The victory against came against the Faroe Islands and against Luxembourg as well. There has been some frustrating... Aaron's right, you know, we can look, we are where we are now, and where we are is fantastic, and we're not taking anything away. But there has been frustration under Steve Clarke. I think back to the Russia games where we were very, where we were overrun. But that was 2 years ago, and that was also where he was trying to find his feet. International football is so tough. So we're going to give him all the kind of, you know, give him all the praise he deserves because we are where we are. Czech Republic. The Czech Republic are a team that we know fairly well, fairly recently. Obviously, we've played them twice. We beat them 2-1 in Czech, and that was during the kind of first wave of the global pandemic.
We beat them under-15s 2-1.
They took the lead as well, which was bloody terrifying. But we did beat them 1-0 at 1-0 at Hampden. Fraser scored. It was a great assist by Dykes. But we played really well in that game. Shouldn't be underestimated. I'm just going to read out that back line against that we put out against the Czech. Considine, Gallagher and McTominay. Which, listen, Andrew Considine stepped in and filled a hole and did a really, really good job. And, you know, part of me was kind of like, just bring him along anyway. But, you know, we have to be realistic. But Andy Constein did a great job. Also in that team, we had a midfield three of McGregor, Jack and McGinn, and two wide players of Greg Taylor and Stephen O'Donnell. And it was Dykes and Fraser up front. So, I mean, our team is going to be very, very different to that tomorrow. Wholesale changes, you would say. But this Czech side, Erin, we'll start with yourself. How are you feeling about this game? How are you feeling about the opponents? We're at Hampden. I know there's no fans there, but, you know, it's at home, so we do have that small advantage.
Yeah, I never get overly confident with Scotland. It's weird, because if it was Celtic we're talking about, like, the confidence just always keeps in. You get excited with Scotland. I'm a totally different fan.
Yeah.
Always a nervous wreck. Always feel like it's not going to go our way. That being said, though, I think there's something about this Euros, and I'm joking when I say we're going to draw away to win it and stuff, but I do think we'll get a big result. I genuinely do think that. I think beating Czech Republic would probably be quite a big result. I think beating any of these three would be quite a big result in a major tournament. I think we'll get a big result and at least one really good performance, and hopefully it's going to come tomorrow. As you say, we've got a decent record against them in the semi-recent past. Yes, one of the games they were ravaged by COVID, but the Hampden game, I remember it so clearly because it was the night that I went, by the way, Ryan Jack's all right if you give him a certain role in terms of, you know, hold on. Simon a minute ago was championing him to play and we let that slide, so don't fucking
we give everyone a one.
It was the first time that I'd thought he's actually, you know, there's something there in terms of him as a football player. I thought he was really good that night, to be fair. Although I'm glad that he's missing the tournament because he's a hun bastard.
can't lie, that's it.
But as I said, again, McTominay was another one that night, and Dykes with the assist for Fraser. It was a really good finish for Fraser, but this was early when the signs were maybe starting to change, and I think they two played a huge part in it. There's a quiet confidence for tomorrow. But, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I do think we'll get one big result over the next 3 games.
Simon, we've only seen 3 or 4 games, and obviously what happened to Christian Eriksen was one of the worst things I've ever seen, and God bless him, and hopefully he has a full recovery. The news coming out about Christian Eriksen's good, so I think we were all kind of shook by that. I just want to highlight that and say that how quickly things can change in life. So, yeah, that was a shocking bit. Good to hear he's doing well. But these first round of games have been really, really cagey. But fuck it, like, do you know what I mean? Like, we've played them twice in the last recent months, as Erin says. We beat them last time we played them at home. What fears do you have about tomorrow more than opposition and just general fears?
I think, in general, the thing that a fear, I suppose, is the best way of putting it, with the Scotland team, as I think you alluded to it with O'Donnell, or sorry, with Patterson and Hendry about concentration. I think the goals, I was doing a kind of making a video thing and I was putting all our goals in. I've watched basically every highlight package for the last 6 years, and I was looking at it and the goals we concede, a lot of the goals we concede are really, really cheap. And it does concern me because, especially the Steve Clarke's first game against Cyprus, and I know it was his first game and whatever, but they just, it was so easy for them. And I think in the first half, I was at that game, and in the first half, their centre half, left side of the centre half, who was brilliant that day, he just strolled right through the middle of the team. And I know it was just, we've come on leaps and bounds. I mean, that was only a few months after we get shagged off Kazakhstan 3-0, which was probably the worst moment of my life, watching that in a hotel room in Bangkok when no aircon.
Jesus.
Crying, just watching that, like, what the fuck is going on here? But for me, it is about concentration. I think that we've got top quality players, but it's that way where it was like kind of similar with Rodgers, and when we had Rodgers in Europe, we've got quality. That team picked itself. It was, everyone was just unanimous decision, that is the team, that is the starting 11. But when the big time came, when we went into European games and we went into big games, it was just the same story of just absolute nonsense. And that's what gives me the fear about it. The goals we concede are way too, they're too cheap. And I think it just maybe it comes down to experience, maybe it comes down to, I don't really know what it comes down to be fair, but I think that's what, I think we've got that, and they let their heads down about a bit too easy. The game against Luxembourg the other day, we started the first 5 minutes on top, front foot, looked great, and then they give us a wee bit back, and it just seems as if every player went into their shell for 15-20 minutes. And see, if we allow a team to do that, if we allow Czech Republic, Croatia or England to do that to us, we'll get absolutely battered. We need to be able to step up and be counted, and it comes from leadership. And I think Andy Robertson is a good captain, but I think there's other leaders in the park who need a bit more vocal with that. I think they all respect Robertson as the captain, but your likes of Tierney and McGinn and McTominay, they seem to be the more vocal players. And I think we need everybody to step up and take charge of that, because that's what gives me the fear, is allowing teams to bully us a wee bit.
Yeah, I agree with that. See, on the captaincy, you know, I've been very, very, very critical of Andrew Robertson for Scotland through nothing other than frustration. However, I think recently he's played really, really well. He's played his way into form. And for that, I think, great. It shows a reaction. It shows that he knew that he wasn't, you know, performing to the level he needed to be, and he stepped up. And for that, I think, fantastic. John McGinn, I think, is an absolute leader on the park. John McGinn is not far off captain material for me for Scotland. I think he pulls on that top and he just becomes a completely different player. You do see that the weight of the Scotland top or the international jersey for any country, you know, really weighs heavy on some players more than others. And I think a guy like McGinn, I think at first Robertson, it weighed him down, but he's since realised how he can perform at his best. McGinn, I think, has become a better player from the first day he put on that. I think it was against Denmark was his debut. I watched it in the Queen's Park Cafe. It was terrific. Played really, really well. So yeah, I mean, from a Czech Republic point of view, they've got some good players. They've got the West Ham player, Thomas Suzek. They've got Kufal right back, although because he's at right back and he's up against our left-hand side, kind of ideal in a way. The top scorer was Patrick Schick from Bayer Leverkusen, who's a really, really good player, and he will need to be watched. Focus will need to be put on him. They've got Jack Doe from Sampdoria, and they've got the boy from Burnley, Vidra. I can't remember how he's pronounced his name. I think it's Vidra. He's quite a good player as well. Czech Republic, in terms of coming into this tournament, the last game they played was a 3-1 friendly victory against Albania. They get spanked off Italy. Wales beat them 1-0. They drew one each with Belgium. The Wales and the Belgium result was World Cup qualifiers. But I just, you know, to highlight this, you know, when we played them and beat them 1-0 in Scotland, you know, they'd went to Israel and won. They'd went to Slovakia and won. You know, we beat them 1-0. We beat them fairly convincingly. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all signs point to us being in a positive position here, frankly. And I'm looking forward to waking up tomorrow. Obviously, we record the agenda and then absolutely getting on it. Smashed it in my face. But let's start with, let's look at how Scotland are going to line up. Right, I want to come to both of you. I want us to pick our team. So I think what we can do is we can talk about the team we think, the team that we want and the team that we think. So let's start with goalkeeper. Simon, who would you think the number of the goalkeeper is going to be?
Going to pick Marshall, although, again, I probably should have mentioned this when you're talking about fears. David Marshall, we're talking about players coming off a good season. David Marshall had a very bad season. I remember watching him the week or a few weeks after the Serbia game, and I thought, okay, I'll chuck it on. David Marshall's playing, watched it, absolute clanger, and then went off injured, and I thought, well, what the fuck? But, yeah, it's got to be Marshall, just for every reason. He deserves it in sentiment aside. I think he's the best at the bunch as well. And if it was Craig Gordon, I probably wouldn't watch it. So
love it. I'm in.
Oh no, Gordon's been fucked. I'm not watching.
I'm not watching. I'm in it at this shite.
Fuck this.
Aaron, yourself, thoughts on the number one?
It will be Marshall, although personally I would go for Jim Leighton.
Get involved, yes. I mean, he's in his early 60s, but why not?
He was in his early 60s at fucking the last tournament he played.
He was 40 at France 98.
Nah, I'll be Marshall. And is he the best? He probably is the best. Is he? I don't know. Maybe Gordon's a better goal. I don't know. It's probably a toss-up between the two of them, but Gordon, I'm not a fan of Craig Gordon. Marshall deserves his moment just for being the guy who gets his I'll be David Marshall. And hopefully there's no clangers or injuries coming.
I've never really I like David Marshall as a guy. Seems nice.
Do you know him?
No, I don't.
Div. His mates call him Div.
Big Div. Marshy probably is his actual nickname.
Aye.
Big Marsh.
Marsh, yeah, is a footballer's nickname, isn't it?
Not for me. I'm like David Marshall. I've seen him make so many clangers for Scotland to come out, you know. Even the game, I can't remember one of the, after Serbia, the game against Austria, he made a big clanger. You know, it's very much a case of, I've never been convinced of him being our number one. But at this point in time, he's the best, I'd say. I think Gordon's past it. Gordon strikes fear into me now, the way he didn't maybe 3 years ago. So I think Marshall deserves it because of what he'd done to get here. And I just don't think there are any other options. Back three, I want one from each of you. We'll start with yourself, Aaron. Who's your back three? Left, middle, right.
Tierney, Hanley, and Hendry.
Give me a couple of reasons why.
I've already spoken about it. Obviously, Kieran Tierney is a must pick. Him and Robertson seem to have found a nice balance on the left-hand side. Some of the movement's really good. Kieran Tierney's become a real attacking threat for a centre-half. And they also, you know, he's great defensively anyway. There's never any qualms with Kieran Tierney in a defensive or an attacking prospect, so he's in there. Grant Hanley, I think, is probably the better of the... I'm trying to think of a nice way of putting it. The better of the limited centre-halves. So you think of Hanley, Gallagher...
It's pretty good, eh? Respectful.
Hanley, Gallagher, McKenna. I can't believe I'm saying Grant Hanley's the better... Not a huge fan of Hanley, as you can imagine, but I think he's probably the slightly better of them. So I'd go him in there, although I've got real concerns about his pace and stuff, but that's the same for McKenna and Gallagher. So that's a tough one. I like Declan Gallagher. Played with him as a kid for a few years.
Oh,
had a few sleepovers at his house and stuff. But I think Hanley probably just edges that. Although Gallagher, as Simon said earlier, that performance in Serbia against Mitrovic, I think Mitrovic is exactly the type of player Declan Gallagher wants to play against, where he can go and get physical with him, go get in his face. I don't think you'll see that in any of these games with any of the forwards that are available for the other three sides. So we'll go Hanley, and then Jack Hendry for the reasons I said. You know, we've spoken about him consistently on here, Gal. We've done a full report on him for the loan stuff. We've done some scouting on him. He's improved going out to Belgium. I don't know if it's genuine improvement or if it's just that, you know, he's grown in confidence again. He looks a lot more like the player that was at Dundee. there's still the same issues that there always were in terms of concentration, maybe squeezing too high, going to ground too often. But he's decent on the ball. You know, he isn't overly progressive in his passing, but he will give us some sort of progression where we need it. I think we really need someone in that back line who can try and help us move forward beyond what Tierney does. Tierney would drive forward. I think we need somebody who's comfortable in possession. I think it's really important to get that balance in the free, so Jack Henry's got to play. If I see a sort of Hanley, Gallagher, Tierney, I would be really disappointed.
Simon, yourself, who's your back three?
I would probably pick the same back three, to be fair. I know people that might listen to shoot me down in flames, but I quite like the idea of a Stephen Welsh type player. I think I was gutted to not see him get in, and I know he's got limited ability, but he's also comfortable on the ball and he's happy to go forward. And I think that's why Hendry, I'd go Hendry, because we need to have that balance, and we need to have, it's a risk worth taking. We need to win the game. If it was the England game or Croatia game, I would probably be more likely to side with, you know, going with a defensive pairing, and or a more defensive back three rather. Tierney is that gifted that he can, if we're under the cosh for 5 minutes, he can give you the best defensive performance you can see. But also, if we're putting pressure on, he'll go and beat two or three players and take you up the park and completely change the tone of a game. We don't have that on the other side, and I think that with O'Donnell at right back, and it will be O'Donnell, I think you need to have Hendry, somebody on that side that can take the ball and go forward. O'Donnell is very shy at going forward. I don't really know why. I remember that Cyprus game actually being at it, and at one point he got the ball and it was right in front of me, and he just had the whole right channel. It was a counter-attack. He had the whole right channel to himself, and he just stopped at the halfway line and played it sideways. I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, just run, just go. So I think I'd go Hendry, Hanley, and obviously Tierney, but Hanley needs to just be in there just to header everything, even if it's on the deck. He seems like that kind of guy that would just header the ball on the floor. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. What do we think? I'll come to, for the Clark pick, I'll come midfield. I'll come to you, Simon. Aaron, who do you think Clark's going to pick at centre back?
I think he'll go Tierney, Hanley, Hendry. Okay. I think.
Interesting. And, you know, given all those kind of points of view, then, yeah, it would make sense. It's 3-5-2. Will it be a 2-1 pivot? Is that what we're looking at? Or will it be a 1?
Look at you. You've been listening to the analysis.
Listening to Beyond the Scoreboard, of course.
How did I forget?
Yeah, but that's what we call it now. But do you think it will be like a, will it be that sort of standard two sitting with one up front, or will it be a sort of one with two? What's your kind of take on how we'll line up with that middle section, Aaron?
It'll probably go with the double pivot and then McGinn ahead of it, I would think. Probably McTominay, McGregor. I know there's a real clamour for Billy Gilmore, and I'm a huge, huge fan of Billy Gilmore.
This is your team, remember. Who do you want to play? So, because
I think I would go McTominay and McGregor as well, and I think that's what Clark would do. Gilmore gets really close to coming into the team for me, really, really close. But he's only played 5 games for Chelsea this year. He's not played a lot of football. He's still developing, and while age and stuff like that doesn't factor into my decision here, I think Gilmore's the type of player, when you're dominating possession in midfield, you want him in there getting on it, creating it. I just think McGregor and McTominay, just that bit of experience in terms of game time, not age, but in terms of game time, I think that's just that's going to be so important for this tournament. Billy Gilmore will be a great option off the bench, because he can give you both things. If you're winning the game, he can come on and keep the ball for you. He can help you keep the ball, he can help you circulate it. And if you're not winning the game, he can come on and get on the ball and try and make things happen. So I think he's a fantastic option to have in the squad. But for me personally, I would go McTominay, McGregor, and McGinn just ahead of them. As you say, John McGinn's been a catalyst for Scotland, and it's taken me longer than it should have to mention him. You look at his goal record, his goal return. I say in games where maybe we aren't, but in games where I want us to be a bit more progressive, be a bit more on the front foot, you know, take the games to the team, John McGinn always seems to be the guy who goes ahead and does that. You know, a couple of hat-tricks in his time. So he's an absolute must pick as well.
Simon, your midfield three?
I think a great point about Gilmore as well. I think off the bench, he really is. It gives you a lot that you can, whatever situation you're in, and you're looking for a sub to impact a game, as little as we've seen from him because he hasn't played that much football, it does look as if he could come on and influence a game whatever way you need him to. But I would probably go the same midfield three, although that said, I'd like to see Christie in there. Christie, we see the best Christie for Scotland, and it's not just what he can do going forward. Christie off the ball for Scotland is ridiculous. It's a phrase I hate saying he's got an engine, but he really does. He gets about, and it's those extra yards that he makes up for, where I think we're talking about players being in form going into the team. Cal McGregor's, I couldn't really tell you the last time Cal McGregor had two good games back to back. But that said, Cal McGregor could go and have the three best games of his career in the next fortnight. He still has that ability. So I would like to see Ryan Christie feature, but I don't know whether it'd be further forward or not, or what Clark will do. But I think McGregor, the balance, it's a great balance. If you literally were to pick players, McTominay, McGregor, McGinn, it is like literally the perfect balance. If you were to describe those players for a midfield three, it's exactly what you're after. So I think Scott McTominay is one of the best in the Premier League at what he does. And I think that's, as I said, perfect balance. And hopefully McGregor can get his finger at his arse for the first time in a while.
Hey, Aaron, come in.
I just want to double down on McGregor a wee bit, because I think what Callum McGregor does a lot of really good unseen work, I think. And in terms of, if you've got a centre-half like Kieran Tierney who's going to end up in the byline consistently putting crosses in the box, it can only happen with guys like McGregor and Robertson knowing that they have a role to fill to allow that to happen. I think there's been games over the course of the last wee while where Callum McGregor maybe hasn't shone out or stood out at all because, you know, he's not doing much on the ball. But I think the role that he performs for Scotland is one that's hugely important. And I think that's why as well, you know, we've said it so many times on here as well, Gal, we've looked at Callum McGregor a lot this season, say he's just not doing enough. He's not taking the game by scruff of the neck and stuff. And he's making mistakes and he normally wouldn't have. Because the type of player who's never going to stand out or shouldn't really ever stand out. He's more of a cog within a system, and I think Steve Clarke uses him really well to free up other areas of the team.
Robertson's going to be our left wing back. Who's the right wing back for you, Aaron?
Firstly, Greg Taylor's my left wing back.
Get yourself fuck up. Jesus.
So obviously with Robertson the left. On the right, yeah, sort of played devil's advocate earlier and said, would you be tempted to do James Forrest in a game where you want to go and dominate? I think we need to be realistic and understand that Czech Republic or Luxembourg or anything like that, you know, it's going to be a fairly even game. I don't see it's one that we probably dominate. So I think we go O'Donnell initially. And what that leaves you again is options off the bench. It's not like me to be pragmatic. If it was me managing, I probably wouldn't do that. But, you know, also the fear kicks in and you think just stay in the game, keep it tight. And then you look at our bench, it could be really strong as well. So I think you'll go O'Donnell. Forrest is one that I would consider. I definitely would. But for always, it's not that he's poor defensively. He gives you all the effort. He's just not quite as adept defensively. Although on the flip side, you get probably a bit more going forward. But hopefully we'll have enough anyway.
Simon, who's your, as I say, Robbo, as I call him. I call him Robbo. Go on.
In the pub with Robbo and Marshy.
Me, Robbo, Marshy.
Dykesy.
Hendry. No, because that's just his name, isn't it? It's not an
He'll be Hendo.
Oh, fuck off. Oh, no. Jesus Christ. Who's your right? Is it O'Donnell for you as well, Simon?
It's probably going to be O'Donnell, although it burns me to say that because I don't know how we can go to a major tournament and leave the greatest Celt since Jinky Johnson on the bench. But anyway, James Ford. But I think it's a great point there about the options and off the bench. I think that's the one thing that we do have a great starting lineup, but at the same time, we've got options off the bench that can change games. And
yeah,
not to go back to Celtic, but how many times have we seen this season you look at the bench and think, what the fuck can we do with that? How can we change it? Fucking what's Montgomery going to do? Come on, a fat Griffiths, like, where are we going with this? But you look at the Scotland bench, we've got players like Gilmore or Forrest or Patterson or whoever it may be, Christie, that can come in.
And David Turnbull?
Turnbull as well, they even mentioned him, yeah. So we've got players that can come in and they could literally play anywhere, really, anywhere that need them to do any specific role that we need. And we've got a lot of players like Christie and Turnbull who can go into that space. So I would go O'Donnell, and I think I would have O'Donnell for every start in every game. He is reliable, or the most reliable. And as much as I've got a grievance with him going forward, he is very sensible defensively, which is a gift and a curse, I suppose. But I'd go O'Donnell.
Who do you think? How do you think Clark will Clark line up with Robertson, McTominay, McGregor, McGinn, and O'Donnell? Simon,
yeah.
I think that's basically what he's going to go for. I think he might throw a curveball. I don't really see it, to be fair, because Steve Clarke is arguably the most predictable manager you've ever seen in your life. But he's predictable, but also he gets results. So yeah, I think that's probably going to be the five.
So the two that we've got up front. Is it going to be, and I'll come to you, Aaron, first, and then I'll come to you, Simon, but is it going to be a strike partnership, or is it going to be a striker with a winger off him? You think about Ryan Fraser, you think about Ryan Christie, you think about James Forrest. Those are three guys who, and by the way, I tell you something, see having the option to bring those three players off the bench, I think it's insane. They're three high-quality footballers. But what how do you think he's going to line up? Is he going to go Adams, Dykes, or what's your thoughts, Aaron?
I hope he goes Adams. I think what you've seen in the Luxembourg game was they two really starting to hit it off as a partnership.
Yeah.
I think we've seen them start to really link up, do some really good things. I think, you know, Adams can, he kind of drops off and gets more involved in the game. You know, Dykes will stay high and central, give us that real focal point, and hopefully Adams will be able to pick up little pockets of space in and around him in the similar way that any of the three wingers or even a David Turnbull probably would. Adams just got that little bit more going forward, that little bit more of a goal threat. I think we've seen NATO start to blossom. I heard Shea Adams do an interview recently as well, saying that, you know, him and Lyndon Dykes spend a lot of time together, they get on really well, you know, they eat together and stuff like that quite often. So I think stuff like that is important. It's probably overlooked, but
yeah, I do too.
You know, getting especially with a partnership, someone that you're playing that close with, you know, it's a big squad, you're not going to get on with everyone or be close to everyone, but someone who you're playing right up there alongside, I think it's important to get to know each other a bit, and it was heartwarming to hear that. It was good to hear. I think we've seen shoots of a real good partnership in the Luxembourg game. I think, obviously, you factor in the level of opponent. Luxembourg aren't quite as shite as they used to be, but, you know, they're not the Czech Republic, or they're not at the level of the teams we'll face in this tournament. But I think you give them the opportunity tomorrow, at least at Hampden, in the first game, in a game that we probably do need to win. I think you give the two the opportunity. And by the way, Kevin Nisbet's not far off in terms of what he'd done in the Holland game as well, or the Netherlands game. Thought he came on, done really well, obviously got himself a goal, but hasn't looked out of place in the international stage since he broke in. Someone who probably deserved his opportunity a wee bit earlier than he got it. So he's another good option as well off the bench. It just goes to show that we do have a fairly strong squad. But I suppose the answer to your question, Gal, is I hope that he'll go Dykes and Adams. That's what I would do. And actually, I think he will. I think he'll give them the opportunity on the first game.
Simon?
Aye. I think it's, again, similar to what I was saying about the midfield three. If you were to pick two players for a partnership up top, that's kind of what you want. And we offer, it's not as if we've got two strikers that, you know, they're similar, or they don't really have, they won't impose themselves. Dykes and Adams can both make a mark in a game, and whether it be 90 minutes or 89 minutes of failing to trouble the back line, that 1 minute is all it takes. And I think the difference between them, if you're a back, it also kind of makes Czech Republic have to play in their hands a wee bit, because if they've got Dykes, if you're lining up against a Dykes, you have to play a certain way against him, and if you've got Shea Adams off him and he's getting in behind as well, all of a sudden they need to be a lot more cautious. It makes them have to actually line up to suit us, rather than them sitting their stall out for us to have to break them down. So I really like Shea Adams and Dykes together. I know we've not really seen a great amount of it, but I think, again, talking about players going in form, and I know every player's going to be hungry. It's not as if anyone going to the Euros is going to think, aye, this is a canter, or I can't really be arsed. But Shea Adams and Lyndon Dykes are both going there wanting to make a name for themselves. I know Lyndon Dykes has recently moved to QPR, but Shea Adams rejected Scotland for years until this came up, and there's a very specific reason for that. He wants to do it on an international stage and make that leap in his career, and I think he possesses huge quality. I think he's probably the best player that we've got as a forward by some distance, and I think he could have a huge campaign here. So I would go for the pair of them just because of what they both individually bring as a pairing.
Erin?
Just want to pick up on Simon saying if you could pick a partnership, that's what it'd be. Mine's would be Larson and Sutton, just to be clear. Just so everyone knows.
Mine's actually Jan Veniger, Hesling and Scott McDonald. So
just to confirm, those four players are not eligible. I'm being told, yes, sorry, it's just coming in my earpiece. They are not eligible. They have all retired from football also, so that's a bit weird. But also, four class strikers. I mean, you know, Larson, Sutton, Vinegar, Hesling and McDonald. If you're picking a World Cup Celtic squad, Erin Connolly, maybe you will be soon. They might make the squad.
Already got it picked. I'm just waiting on the go-ahead.
I'll give you the go-ahead soon. Don't you think of that? But yeah, I think all really good points. I mean, the fear I have is the interview I saw with Steve Clarke at halftime. The interview showed a Steve Clarke interview, not an England interview at halftime of a game. It was weird. It did last 18 seconds or whatever, but essentially Steve Clarke saying, we don't have to win this game. A draw is fine. And I know that's all mind games, and I know that's all. He will want this team to win. But part of me worries that he's going to be a little bit more conservative than we'd hoped. And one way that might be that he might play Dykes and play Fraser off him, or play Forrest off him. I think Forrest is probably the third choice out of those three, just because of the injury and because in terms of form and the fact that Christie and Fraser have played more. I know Fraser's been injured recently, but he's played more this season. So that's my only concern. But I think that team, David Marshall, Kieran Tierney at left centre-half, Hanley at central centre-half, Hendry at right centre-half, McTominay, McGregor, McGinn is your 2-1 pivot, Robertson on the left-hand side, O'Donnell on the right-hand side with Dykes and Adams. That's probably the team that you'll go with. I would maybe tweak it a little bit, but at the same time, I completely would be happy if that was the team that played.
What's your tweaks, Gil?
My tweaks, I honestly would be tempted to play Patterson ahead of O'Donnell, and that's just because I think Patterson is more likely to drive the Czech Republic. I think what Simon said about O'Donnell, I think he's too scared to go forward. If he goes forward, if he goes forward and he loses the ball, he just doesn't have the pace to get back. And that sort of... I like Stephen O'Donnell, so I think he's been a fantastic part of the squad, and I think he's an important part of the squad. I just think he's a...
That's just a step up.
It's a bit too much. But at the same time, Patterson's played, one cap? He's got one cap for Scotland. So part of me thinks, fuck it, all in. Play Gilmore, play Patterson. What have we got to lose? And then part of me does go to that sort of, well, actually, you know, McGregor. My only fear with McGregor is he has been on off form. But I'm not questioning how good a footballer he is, because I think he's excellent. But we'll see. It'll be interesting, and I really look forward to it. Let's go with predictions. We'll start with Simon first. Simon, what's your prediction for tomorrow? And don't say pain. Don't say pain.
It's going to be 3-1 Scotland. I think we'll score for a corner, a free kick, and a penalty. Dead balls.
Direct for a corner.
Aye. Just a... Was it Paul McStay that done that?
No, it was Lubo. Lubo certainly did it.
Did he? I thought he rolled it to someone.
I mean, he did roll it, but it's basically the fucking corner kick.
It's not direct for corner,
fuck
is
up.
It?
Fuck up. Charlie Tully done it twice in one game.
I think that's the one. Was one of them not the referee told him to retake it or something?
Charlie Tully scored, and then the referee told him to retake it, and he done it again. So, what a boy. 3-1 from Simon there. Terrific. Erin, yourself?
2-0 to Scotland, of course, I think.
I just thought that we line at the end.
It's just been a lot of positivity here, and I'm like, fucking hell, are we setting up for a fall?
Do you know what? See, if we get scudded in every game, what are you going to do? At least we're here. I know that might sound defeatist and sound like, you know, but fuck it. You know, we're here, and this is the start of something, I hope. This is the start of our build to the World Cup. Myself, I think it will be 3-1 Scotland as well. I do think Czech Republic might take the lead. But we just have to hold strong, hold fast, buck fast, all the fasts, Fast and the Furious. Fast times at Richmond High as well. It's a bit weird. Listen, this has been
Scotland,
great.
3-1 Scotland have only scored... Scotland have only scored more than 3 goals once in like the last 12 games or something.
At Euro 96, we scored 1 goal. At France 98, we scored 2 goals. You know, it's... Fuck it, 3-1, 8-0, actually. listen, before we go, any pre-game rituals? Simon, we'll start with yourself. And where are you watching the game?
I actually won tickets for Go Radio to go and watch it at the Radisson Red. So I'm going there, which I was just going to watch it. I've went and... got a projector sorted and all that for the England game for the garden. I've got all the boys coming around, but I was just going to go to the pub. My mates had booked the pub, but I won the tickets and I thought, a couple of free pints and get to watch it in the Radisson Red and it might be decent. So I'm going there, but I think tomorrow probably, because it's an earlier game and I'm off, probably start drinking very early. And I actually feel as if the game's later on today. Like, that's how... Like, yeah. I've got the jitters. Like, you know that way, like a Champions League night, you'd be sitting at like 4 o'clock, absolutely itching to get on it. I've got that right now. So I'll probably get that steaming and miss the game. I woke up Saturday morning. I was like, what was the Italy score, by the way? Absolutely pissed at my nuts. So I'll be watching the Radisson Red and should be decent. Barry Ferguson's there, so I'm going to have a wee word to him. And
maybe spit in his face?
I was going to say
a wee two foot tackle on his knees, but
we'll see what happens. Yourself, Aaron, any pre-match rituals? Where are you watching it?
So pretty much I put my left shin guard on first and then I put my right one on.
I do that with my underwear.
What? I don't have any like that. Tomorrow I'll just watch in the house. I'm working at night. I'm running time attack at night, which is technically work. So there'll be no beer or anything for me. I've just went back on the beer the last 2 weekends, enjoying myself after 10 months off it. So that's been fun. But my wee brother's going to try and disappear for work for a few hours and come over and we'll watch it together. Obviously, Rory will be in school, sadly, so I'll need to do a school run at some point. I've not even thought, nah, he's in after school care. It's fine. I'm just thinking out loud now, live in the podcast.
Yeah, that's just part of it. Love it.
He's in after school care, so it's fine. I'll watch the full game. Won't watch it with him, which is a bit sad, but fuck him.
We are recording, Jesus Christ, fuck him. I've just, Jesus. you and Ian Dugan hating your children since...
I love my child.
Of course you do.
A lot. Of course. Children, I've got 3.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. What's going on? We're all delirious with this build-up to this game, but no, this has been really, really good. I've really enjoyed... talking about Scotland in a really positive way. Erin and Simon, we're going to cover the other two games and hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll be covering a couple of knockout games. If not though, fuck it, we'll just maybe do a podcast where we just get drunk and reminisce about these 3 games in like 2 weeks time, weirdly, but there you go. Season review, Scotland, I don't know. Listen, I've really enjoyed this. This has been great fun. Thanks to you guys. Thanks to Aaron Connolly and Simon for taking part. Check out Fit's Been Happening podcast. Check out Time to Tackle. Fantastic events taking place with Time to Tackle. We'll cover that in the agenda tomorrow as well. This has been great. Aaron, Simon, I'm Chris Gallagher. I'm on the Scotland. This has been the preview.